Oh, this is a nice house, Latimer. A perfect place for me to recover from this cold. And I'd never have guessed it was here, tucked away in the woods like this. This isn't one of those houses that gets really creepy at night, is it?
No, ma'am. And besides, we're only having afternoon tea.
Oh dear, it sounds like you've caught the cold too, Latimer. Now, just to be clear, there isn't some crazy axe murderer around the corner? Because I've seen that kind of film before, you know.
Well, I believe there is a woodcutter in the local area, but as far as I'm aware, he is of sound mind. Would you care to sit down, ma'am?
Yes. Oh, this chair is a bit big for my tastes.
How about this one, ma'am?
No, it's too small, and anyway, one of the legs is broken. This one, however, is just right.
Very good, ma'am.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't had a horrible cold for the last week. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Please excuse the huskiness of my voice. I'm over the worst of this cold, but it's left me sounding a little bit like a late-night DJ. At least this cottage is warm and cosy, considering the chilly weather, with enough rustic charm to cheer even the most sad January heart. Do make yourself at home whilst the tea brews in the pot.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, a Ms. Natasha Barden.
Oh, splendid. Let's see her calling card. Natasha Barden, Deputy Publishing Director, Wielder of Red Pens. Send her in.
Very good, ma'am.
For those of you who don't know, Natasha Barden is the Deputy Publishing Director for Harper Voyager. She is involved in the publication of many well-known fantasy books, including those by Jo Abercrombie, Francesca Haig, Saba Tahir, who wrote An Ember in the Ashes, and the latest novel by Sarah Pimbra.
Miss Natasha Barden, ma'am.
Hello, Natasha. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A lovely cottage this is.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to say that it's mine, but we're just borrowing it for the afternoon. It's got that rustic charm, hasn't it?
It really does. There's a curious smell of porridge as well around here.
Yes, I wasn't sure because I've got the tiniest cold and I thought, is that just the cold or not? But no, I'm glad you said that.
Oaty.
I'm very pleased, actually. It shows it's starting to go. So would you care for some tea?
I'd love some tea. Thank
and
you.
And how do you take your tea?
Builder-like. Just a little bit of milk, show it the milk, hide the milk, and then give me the tea.
Marvellous. And would you like some parkin to go with it?
Oh, I'd love a bit of parkin. Thank you very much.
I know it's not really the traditional time of year for it, but I think that we should break all rules associated with only eating certain cakes at a certain time of year, because that's just cruel.
And January is it's a sad month.
It
so
is.
I think all cake in every form should be celebrated.
I couldn't agree more. Now, don't mind the chickens over there. You're not allergic to them, are you?
No, that's absolutely fine. I love a hen. We're good. We're fine.
There's nothing like a nice hen.
Nothing like a nice hen. Quite.
Especially with a bit of gravy. I didn't just say that.
I hope they didn't hear you.
No, we're safe. That's good.
Okay.
Now, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring with you today?
Well, my sidekick, Bob the dog, has obviously come. He won't hassle the chickens. It's fine. He's just going to fall asleep by the fire over there.
That's quite adorable.
Yeah, but Border Terrier, if you're wondering. Yeah, we don't cut his hair. That's why he looks a little bit like a monster. but I've also bought my dragon's egg paperweight.
Is that a real dragon's egg?
That's a real dragon's egg.
Where did you get that from?
I can't say because obviously, you know, you'll hassle the dragons for one of your own. But if you do ever need to borrow a dragon's egg, it's here. It's ready to go.
Blimey. So I'm assuming you haven't yet walked into a pyre holding it yet.
One day. I'll get so cross with work that I'll burn all the manuscripts and and walk in with my dragon's egg in hand.
Oh, that's brilliant. They can emerge and wreak your vengeance on the publishing world with dragons.
Exactly, quite, yeah.
That's lovely. Now, I understand that you're a gamer.
I am, yes.
I was wondering what the last game was that you were utterly addicted to.
Dragon Age.
Yay!
Yay, hooray! Yeah, absolutely addicted. I don't think I emerged from my my room. I reverted to my gamer state and just played a lot of Dragon Age in my pyjamas and ate cereal.
Just to make it absolutely perfect.
Yeah, not to be a cliche, but you know, who wants to cook when there are worlds to save?
Yeah, definitely. So what was it about Dragon Age that appealed to you?
Well, I like that you can be a lady. Mm-hmm. And it's getting better, certainly, but for a long time that wasn't an option. So good, strong female protagonist. And also I love the world. I loved how you could dip into the linear storyline if you wanted to, the overall story arc, but then also explore in world, collect all the items, which is something that you've got me on a rant now, this is probably a mistake, which I found that Witcher 3 was also good for, but did in a very different way, and I felt that it was too loose, if anything, for me.
Personally. Oh, that's interesting.
Hmm.
I also, I'm not playing it, but Pete has just started to play Witcher 3, and I really could not. I was so shocked by the shocked is the wrong word. It was like, oh yeah, the whole opening dream sequence where there was all of the female nudity.
Yeah, it's just so cliche. It's so cliche.
It really was.
Because
he was like, you know, semi naked, but there were no long panning shots across his bum.
Yeah,
like there was for the woman.
Unfortunately, you know, everyone likes a good bum.
Yeah,
it's a shame that it was just all about the lady.
Yeah, and it was really nice in Dragon Age where you get everything that you could possibly want.
Exactly, and all the, and also that the relationship storylines, and it just wasn't cliched in that way where you have like, man, oh, there's a woman, let's. Kind of a little bit sexist. The woman's there to be looked at rather than as an active participant in the story. But yeah, there you go.
It's also really great with Inquisition, because that was the last game I played properly, and I romanced Cullen.
He's a hottie.
He is lovely, but I wanted to romance Cassandra, but she wouldn't have me because I was too much of a girl. So I had to go for Cullen as my second. And then luckily enough, Pete could then play a game where he was romancing Cassandra so I could see what I missed.
What happened in that storyline? Well, I chirped onto Blackwall and felt so betrayed at the no spoilers bit that I actually cried, and then I went on to Cullen. So
Cullen doesn't let you down.
No, he's strong. He's handsome.
He is, and you know what was really weird is that he does this smile in the cutscenes.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I'd ever been attracted to a computer game character, and I said to
Pete. Did you blush?
I did. I was like, Pete, what is happening? Because I found that really hot, and it's like a computer game. And, you know, that's reserved for films and TV, not computer game experiences. Mm-hmm. They did that smile very well.
I'm a really big fan, because I really like the Mass Effect series as well.
Uh-huh.
And I just love everything they're doing with that new form of storytelling, which is why I think I've always probably been attracted to games, from like Final Fantasy VII to then kind of that started it for me, and then everything on. But it's just so, like with The Last of Us as well, that it's a beautiful story and it's really well told, and it's a really fantastic immersive experience. I really love how much the industry has grown. In some ways, at least, anyway.
Yeah, I think some aspects of the industry are doing fantastic things, and BioWare are like leagues ahead. And it was
absolutely, yeah.
It was a real eye opener seeing that opening to Witcher 3, and because we've played BioWare so much in the house that I forgot that other games are still lagging a little bit in that area.
Absolutely.
With some games, it doesn't matter. Like Diablo 3, we played the hell out of that for hours because it's a couch co-op.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is just got the most ridiculous kind of female character art. And, oh, it's totally like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's so much fun as a game experience. I can switch that off.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah.
So as an editor, you yes. work with a lot of authors. Now, between us, just between us, what's the most annoying thing that authors do?
Oh, gosh. No, there are no annoying things that authors do.
Oh.
No. They're all perfect. They're absolutely wonderful creatures that you are. You're all wonderful.
I'm not sure you're being entirely forthcoming.
No, I am. I honestly am. You're all lovely in your very own special way.
Yes, we're quite special, aren't we?
We're very special.
We do a whole unique brand of neuroticism.
There isn't anything that annoys me. I would say I wish I could give confidence or give some confidence to authors in that I think that it's a very lonely and quite scary profession where there's very little interaction apart from, you know, the odd when around publication and also obviously with the characters in one's head. But there's a confidence to it which I think, especially particularly debut authors, that, you know, there's a tendency to overthink and to worry and not enjoy. And yeah. I think that enjoying the experience and enjoying publishing is so important, and it's so easy to get scared and sidetracked with everything else around it, but you're doing something that you've probably loved for a very long time and cared for, and I think that that should be celebrated more rather than worrying about the future too much.
I agree. It's one of those weird things as well when you finally get to the point where you can say, actually, I think I have a fledgling career here. Mm. There is no security whatsoever.
No.
And that is a whole special kind of terror where
absolutely
you just have no idea, and you only know what your career is doing for the contract that you have, and then all of a sudden it can, you know, you're out of contract. It's like, oh, am I going to get another one? And oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, the writing part is hugely enjoyable. But editors work mostly from the shadows as far as kind of the wider book world are concerned.
I am.
You are that shadowy.
Pennell, yes, I'm a shadowy figure. I own my own clothes.
So could you tell us a little bit about what you do? Because something that I'm becoming aware of the more that I talk to people who've read my books is that people have very different ideas about what editors actually do. So could you tell me a bit about what you do?
Well, I can. I don't know how interesting it'll be, but I can tell you a little bit about it. So I'm Deputy Publishing Director at Voyager, as we've established. And I edit the books that I buy. So I'd get a submission in from an agent, and if I love it, I'll take it to acquisitions and buy it. And for me, it's always key to have that passion around a project. And because you will come to love it as much as the author does. And then there's a structural edit where we'll go through and look over the plot and the structure of the book and go over the characterization and story arcs. Once we've done all that, then we'll move to copy edit and such. But it's so much more than just the editing. It's the relationships you maintain with the other departments. It's thinking around the marketing and the actual publishing of the book and how to publish it and who to send it to and who to get quotes from and like the cover direction as well. It's a very varied job where you have to be several people at once.
Yeah, kind of at the centre of a hub, I guess.
Yeah, you are. You're coordinating the... I don't want to sound too lame, but you're trying to coordinate the creativity of others, be they the author, the person who's in charge of the marketing, the publicist, the salesperson, and channel that creativity into an overall vision and kind of pitching it at a certain demographic or trying to extend it further than that demographic. So yeah, you're like the conductor, as it were.
Do you feel that you're also like a champion for that book internally?
Yeah, I certainly feel that you I wouldn't buy a book unless I loved it and I wanted to champion it and I thought it had potential and that we can do a lot with it. So you certainly are its champion and you're the cheerleader for that title and that author.
Mm. One of the things that I've always wondered about, I don't think I could ever be an editor because I would probably...
You like tea, though. You're halfway there.
Really? It's, yes, 50% tea, 50% all the other stuff you just described. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I've got the tea bit down, but the bit that I think I would really fall down on is I would never know how to do the right amount because it seems to me that there's a fine line between improving an author's work and making it the best it can be, but also making sure that it's still their book and leaving their voice and their vision for the book intact. So how do you navigate that line? How do you make sure you don't impose yourself too much, but that you also do just enough?
I think you always have to remember that you are the bridge between the reader and the author. So you are always coming back to, well, will the reader understand it? Because for every author, there's this entire world in their head and their imagination. And there are several hundreds of characters in there that need to come out and to be explored. Mm. And you need to bridge that gap between all of the information that the author holds and how to get that across to the reader without it being overwhelming. I certainly don't think I would, or I hope I don't ever impose myself too much on an author, and you always have to remind the author or authors in general that it's their work, it's their baby. These are just suggestions that we as editors are making to get closer to that readership.
Mm.
And it is definitely a fine line, but it's always optional and it's always just a suggestion. It's never a you have to do this or we won't publish it. I don't, you know, if anyone's ever said that to anyone, I don't think that's really the way forward, and certainly how I wouldn't want to behave like that.
No, it doesn't lend itself to a long-term relationship, does it?
No, exactly. And I think you, as an editor, you buy a book for a very specific reason because you see potential in it and you want to fulfill that potential. Mm. It's never on you to rewrite the book. It's not your work. It's always theirs, and you have to keep that at the centre of everything you do and every suggestion you make.
It's something that I find very enjoyable and a relief about being edited is having that kind of check and balance against what I've done. Because if someone says, I don't think that this works, or could you consider changing it? If there is an immediate, but that's there because of this reason that's happening in the plot, maybe a next book along, which may not seem that as important now, but it is actually really important. And I can advocate for that decision confidently, then I know that I can keep it in. But if the only reaction is, but I like that bit, then I know that I have to get rid of it because it's obviously not working. But no, you can never do that yourself 100% reliably, as you say. We're just so lost in our own worlds.
And I think it's finding a way through. And there will always be a reason for why an author has written a part in. And it's teasing that out and making it clear and making sure that the reader understands it without overriding everything that the subtlety that the author is trying to give the work.
Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult. And I think that it's definitely a partnership, as you say, and it's a discussion, and that's what it should be. It should always be a discussion. It should never be a, this is what has to happen.
And that's one of the things that I enjoy most now that I'm published, is that I have like people who I consider to be like in a team now. It's not like this total solo flight terror experience anymore. Because I know that, I mean, obviously Pete is very involved. He listens to everything I write as we go along, and vice versa. So he's like my first safety net. And now that I've got my agent, I know that she's going to see it before anyone else in the world. So she'll catch a lot. And then the editor, and it's like all of these kind of safety checks before you actually expose it to the reader, which is really reassuring.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, yeah, I think the system of checks and balances, we're very much like the US government. and you can dish out the roles as you see fit. I won't suggest who's the president or anything like that.
Yes, I would like to say that it's me, but I want to be queen.
I'm going to go with that too.
Now, I've got to ask you a very important question in terms of being an editor at a very prestigious imprint. Who would your top three people be to play Twister with?
Oh, that's difficult. Hmm. You know what? I've never played Twister.
Neither have I, because it just seems like the most hellish experience on earth.
I don't really want to get that close to anyone.
I'm exactly the same.
Don't like to be touched. It's actually quite a shock coming into the publishing industry where everyone kisses each other's cheeks. And I'm like, well, I don't know you. I don't particularly want to kiss you. And I don't now know how many times I'm supposed to do it for each individual. So Twister's a whole other minefield that I've never contemplated.
I was so convinced you were going to say I was a bit shocked when I came into publishing and everyone was playing Twister all the time.
Well, that too. Yeah, that too. That's how we choose the Pantones on the book, whatever one you land on. And that's the one it is.
Let's decide on a print run. Spin that dial.
Does it have to be authors? Because that's taking our relationship to a whole other level.
No, I'm not sure.
I'm willing to go to.
No. It doesn't have to be authors. It's be anyone in the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. So, four. Yeah, but not just Chris Hemsworth. He'd have to wear the whole outfit. to make that work.
Chris, you have to wear the costume. It's not me anymore. Yeah.
That's a stipulation. And also, I can't go too old because obviously they might not get up. Because so, I love Bruce Willis, but I'm not sure I'd be into Twister.
He might groan a bit when he moves now. Go, ooh. You know,
well, I think I do anyway, though, don't you? My knees creak in a way that actually I'm quite disturbed by. So, walking upstairs. Okay, I've got to quickly think of another person. It would be, Iron Man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. There was a bit of an Avengers theme there. I don't know why.
Yeah, Avengers and Bruce Willis, that's kind of an odd
mashup.
Can I
just play Twister with the Avengers?
Yeah, but they'd be so much better.
Done. Or Guardians of the Galaxy, anyone from that.
Okay, cool. Excellent.
Yeah. Great
so
film.
Would you let Iron Man wear his armour?
No, because I think he'd win.
Yeah.
And I don't like losing, so I'd have to... No, he's just Stark. That's fine.
Excellent. Good. Well, I'm glad that important question has been satisfactorily answered. We can go forwards now.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So, one of our patrons, the lovely Hisham, has got a question. Okay. So we like to ask people if they have any questions that they would like to bring to the tea table. And he said, more than a year after you signed 15 books by mostly unknown authors from an open submission period, will you be doing something similar again?
I think the open submission period was a very interesting undertaking. And there are some great talented authors in there. It's a really good seedbed that we wanted to see how they did and kind of nurture them, and the series is still ongoing. So I would never say no, but it was such an unprecedented level of submissions that I don't know if we'd be able to do it in the same format, but it's not on the kind of agenda for now. Voyager US have opened their doors, and I think they might be doing it currently, or they've just closed them. We've not got any plans to do it in the future, but I wouldn't rule it out, certainly.
How many did you get out of interest?
I think it was something like 5,000. Yeah.
5,000?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That is a lot of manuscripts to plough through.
Many.
Yeah, wow.
And there's some very uniquely talented people out there. And I think that open submissions periods are always great. And always really good to see what's out there and see what's in the market. But I think having that agent net and having that route to publishing, the traditional route to publishing, I wouldn't ever rule it out. And I think if you're thinking about entering an open submissions period, absolutely do. But given the level of submissions that come through, it's always something you should do alongside other methods of trying to get your work published and trying to get an agent. I wouldn't ever limit oneself to just doing one thing. I think if you're going to go for it, but also do it as well as trying to find an agent, trying to look at, I don't know if you're up for it self-publishing, but that's a whole other can of worms, which we probably don't have time for in this podcast. And with self-publishing, you are not just, you've got to remember you're not just the author, you're the marketeer, you're the publicist, you're absolutely everything that goes alongside that. But so no plans at the moment, but keep at it. Anyone who's thinking of doing that, definitely enter, and at the same time look for an agent.
Yeah, because even if you get in through an open submission period with a publisher, the next thing you're going to need to do is find an agent very quickly.
Absolutely.
It's such a minefield. And I remember very clearly being at that stage where I was just so desperate to be published. And looking back on that feeling now and the things that I used to think and the desperation and how that burning desire really did make me think of doing some really stupid things that I'm glad I didn't do. And some of them that I did do. And, you know, when it changes and when you do get through what is commonly seen as that first gate, you realise that it's like there isn't some kind of nirvana or like utopian land beyond that gate that it felt everyone in the world was keeping you out of. It's like, oh, there are all of the other gates.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's a mountain range.
Yeah.
I was looking for like rainbows and unicorns and, you know, feeling utterly confident in my writing. But where is that?
Yeah, no, I know. That for what never really goes away. And there are people who've been publishing their books for years, and they're always going to have that niggling feeling in the back of their head that, oh, is this good enough?
Yeah.
And it's just keeping at it and keep plugging away. There's not, everyone talks about this kind of elite practice of keeping everyone out there and only a few people get publishing deals and all of this kind of stuff. But what's so interesting being on this side of it and being in publishing for as long as I've been is that it's very much an outside perspective, and there are editors out there who just want to find good work. Yeah. And it will, your effort and dedication will shine through, and you've just got to keep plugging, because there are only so many people who are working in publishing. And then you compare that to how many people there are writing books.
Yeah, like all of us. All of us are writing books. Yeah, it's true. And I think what's so hard when before you get that deal is that there is so little feedback that is kind of helpful or useful, because there are so many reasons why you may not be getting that deal or getting that agent. Yeah.
Those might not have anything to do with you or your writing.
Yeah, and when you're trying again and again and getting rejected again, it's very easy for it to feel like a personal thing, and very easy for kind of normal human social interaction rules to be applied to something which really does not fit those rules. Mm. And that's where I think a lot of the kind of shadowy kind of, oh, they're trying to keep us out thing comes from, because we're fragile beings that are hurt very easily.
Yeah, we all are. Absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. And I think writing groups are a great way to kind of help with the "you are not alone" message, which is so important to realise that, you know, even with every hour in the day, it's so difficult to get through everything you need to get through in any job.
Yeah.
And editors and publishing people are just trying to find the best books out there and reach as many people as possible with those books. So it's a tricky profession.
It is. Are there any books on the horizon that you're very excited about?
Several. I don't know if you've heard about this guy called Peter Newman.
Oh yeah, I've heard of him somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, he's got a new book coming out. It's called The Malice, and it's a follow-up to The Vagrant, which I'm very excited about. Cover is going to be revealed shortly, which is looking pretty super duper.
I'm very excited about that, but that's the first book he's written that made me cry.
Yeah, well, I cried at The Vagrant, but maybe I'm just emotional. for all the wrong reasons as well. Why aren't these people dying? No, I didn't mean that. But there is one bit in The Vagrant that definitely made me cry. If you haven't read The Vagrant, read it, everyone, listeners everywhere. And we have some great follow-ups coming this year. We've got Torch Against the Night by Saba Tahir, which is the second book after An Ember in the Ashes. Mm-hmm. We've got Map of Bones by Francesca Haig, which is a follow-up to The Fire Sermon. We've got Half a War coming out in paperback. We've also got Skull Throne coming out in paperback. So, yeah, really busy year. And we've got the Voyager website and Twitter. Follow along, everyone. Shout out to the imprint. Yeah, so you can find news and new releases on there.
It's funny hearing you say these things because obviously being married to Pete, it's on our horizon as well. And then hearing all the other books, it's like, yeah, there are so many books. There are thousands and thousands of books coming out all the time and we obsess over our own little tiny, tiny, tiny little nook in this world. It's, yeah, interesting times. So something I like to ask all of my guests that come for tea is, if you could choose a theme tune for your life, what would it be?
I've obviously listened to the show before and I thought about this a great deal and I dismissed several, but then came up with Under Pressure.
Oh, classic and so pertinent after the loss of Bowie.
Yeah, I was very sad. Very sad week that week actually with Alan Rickman as well. But I love him and I love his work and I love Queen. So yeah, that's definitely, and I always feel under pressure.
So it's fitting as well. Okay, well, I am about 100% certain that the chickens will know this song because they'll have heard us play it lots. So little chickens, could you sing Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie for Natasha, please?
Bravo. Well played, chickens.
That is a great song. Now, let me just check the teapot. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh, dear.
So that leaves me just to say thank you so much for coming to the Tea Lair today.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely chatting. I love the cottage.
Yes.
Do let me know who you rented it from because I would love to take it out for the summer. It's fantastic.
Okay, I'll ask Latimer. He arranged it. He sees to these things. I mostly just thought about writing books and stuff. So, yes, I'll ask him. And if you follow him, actually, he'll show you the right way to the path back out of the woods. And
lovely.
I'll no doubt see you sometime later in the year.
Thank you very much. Lovely.
Take care. And you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This way, Mum.
Well, that was nice. Oh, I've only just noticed the three stuffed bears over there in the corner.
They look most put out by their condition.
Oh, they do. I'm not going to look at the little one too much because that might make me cry.
Hey, you! What are you doing in my garden? Have you been in my house?
Oh, dear.
Is that Goldilocks?
I'm afraid so, Mum. I thought she was out for the whole day.
She's carrying an awful lot of guns.
You've been in my house. I'm going to shoot you in the belly. Then when I stuff you, I can cover it up.
What's Natasha going to do now?
She's drawing something. It's a gun.
Oh, no, they're going to kill each other. No, wait a minute. That's not a gun.
Did I say gun, Mum? I meant bowl.
Is that porridge?
Pear-baked porridge, judging by the smell.
Ooh, is that porridge? You put that down there and back away. I'm going to eat it. And if I don't like it, I'm going to shoot you.
Oh, dear.
Delicious. That is so good. Ooh. I'm still going to shoot you. Just as soon as I...
Ah, the classic sleeping potion in the porridge trick.
Well, thank goodness for that. Pack our things, Latimer. We'd better go before she wakes up.
Very good, Mum.
While Latimer gets our things, I'd like to raise my teacup to Nicole Roy, Natalie Delaney and Liz Shane, the latest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. I'm also delighted to announce that the winner of the Tea and Jeopardy Advent Charades Challenge is...
Brack, brack, brack.
Phil Shipley. We will be in touch very soon to make arrangements for your prize. All done, Latimer. Good. Let's go out the back door so we don't wake her up.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Puppet.